Hello and welcome to the Subconscious Coaching Podcast, the podcast where I talk about whatever I want because it's my podcast and not yours. Hello, my magic beans. How are y'all doing today? I'm doing amazing. I'm doing some spring cleaning. I am releasing all of the things. I am burning the sustainably harvested Palo Santo, and I'm going into the cupboards and rehoming the things that have dust on them. I've got a car full of stuff for Goodwill, so I feel good. And as I've been cleaning, it's been having me think about receiving. And I often think that the thing that keeps us from receiving most times is that our hands are wrapped around something else. And a closed hand can't receive. So often for me, spring and fall are all about opening my hands and getting into a mode of releasing what I don't need so that I can fall and integrate even more deeply into some deep receiving. And the way that I do this, the way that I get into that receiving mode, is by being willing to release, to open that hand and give. And I like to do it in my home because it's like physical. I can see the space that I'm opening up for new things to come into. And I can be with the emptiness and practice the faith that even better is coming. So for anybody who's wanting to receive more, right? More money, more clients, more friendships, more love. It's important to learn how to be with emptiness. If we aren't willing to be with emptiness, we'll fill all our time with meaningless things, meaningless relationships, meaningless activities. And that means that there's no space for what we want to come in. So in this spring season, what I want to offer to all of you is to create some emptiness in your lives. And the more you're wanting to receive, the more emptiness I want to invite you to create in your schedule, in your drawers, in your social life. Allow that space to exist and to become energetically primed so that when the thing you want comes in, there's actually space for it to fit perfectly in your life. And the process of receiving it is seamless and easy. I'm actually on my way to my storage space in a bit to give everything in it away. Because what I realize as I'm cleaning my house is if I don't have space for it energetically in my day-to-day, I don't have space for it, period. And it takes energy to own things. In this case, the energy is $50 a month for my storage space. But anything you own, a house, a dog, relationships, all of them require energy to upkeep. And when you're owning things that aren't actually useful, they end up draining your energy. The other thing I want to add is that clearing out your physical space requires you to clear out your mental space. Because what will happen as you go to clean is you'll come across things that you keep because you aren't willing to do the emotional work to get closure and feel complete with them. So an example of this might be a half-finished project that you find that's like 2 years old. It's an internal process to close the door on that dream, to close the door on the version of you that was going to finish that project. It takes an emotional, I don't want to say toll, but it's an emotional energy to acknowledge that you're going to choose to never finish it and be okay with that. And to do the work, it's emotional work, that's the word I was looking for. It's emotional work to find acceptance in starting something and not finishing it. Oftentimes, what we find when we're cleaning, but we don't want to let things go, is that they might be remnants of bad decisions that we've made, right? Clothes that we didn't really like and never wore, or health food supplements that we never took, or workout equipment that we never used. What will happen as you're cleaning is you'll find a lot of fantasies about idealized versions of yourself. And cleaning and releasing those things can be a practice of self-acceptance in the now. It also reflects to us how sometimes we shop or spend money or put our energy towards things to try and become someone else, to become some idealized version of who we think we should be. Sometimes we actually lose touch with who we are. Like sometimes I think, I look at the things that I bought and I'm like, I know I was never going to use this. Like, it's a great idea in theory, but like, I just know that some of the random, you know, what did I buy? I was looking at it the other day with some of the workout equipment. Oh, it was like these rings that you like can put up on a tree and then you can do pull-ups and stuff. And it's like, I knew I wasn't going to use these when I bought them, but I was so enamored with the idea of, well, maybe I would, and maybe I could. And this idealized version of myself that I never actually stopped to just be like, this isn't me. This is not going to work for me. Right. And those things are the most powerful things to let go of, because when we let go of them, it's an act of self-love. Because we're claiming sufficiency in ourselves in the now moment, and we're releasing the shame that has us go into those fantasies of a perfect version of ourselves in the first place. So if this April you're ready to do some big receiving, clear out your physical space. I promise you it will clear your energetic and spiritual space to be able to be ready to receive more. Okay, so that's not even the topic I wanted to talk to you all about today. We kind of went on a tangent there. But what I was planning to talk about today is something that I see ubiquitously in the coaching industry. And it's this thought or this coaching that your brain is an asshole when it's being rude or giving you doubtful thoughts or telling you that you're never going to make it, right? It's like, oh, your brain's just being an asshole. Let's keep moving. And I want to talk about today why I think this is an amazing thought at the beginning of your coaching journey, and why as you level up, it's going to hold you back. And as someone who's been on their journey as a coach for 5 years now, and in the past 2 years, I've created about $450,000 in sales, I want to underscore something very important that I've learned along the way, which is the exact thoughts that get you to point A are the exact thoughts that will keep you from getting to point B. There's a certain expiration date in your growth on certain thoughts, and you have to be willing to let go of good for great. And you have to be willing to continually upgrade your thought work and find what's not working anymore in order to find what will work to get you to the next point, right? So an example of this is that when I first started coaching, I had the thought a lot to the fourth grader, the fifth grader's God, right? And that got me out the door in my first year of coaching and gave me sufficiency that even in my feelings of noviceness in coaching and even in my lowly self-concept, right, I could help someone. So while I was working on my self-concept and while I was feeling shaky and on Bambi legs, I used that thought to get me an action and to believe that I could help people and that they would hire me. However, that self-concept, the self-concept of, well, I'm only talented or useful because of the perspective of my clients, cock-blocked me so hard from getting to my next level. Because how can I call in higher level clients, right? Let's say sixth grade, quote unquote, clients, if I only thought I was valuable because my clients were in fourth grade. So when I went to raise my prices, I had to let go of that thought, because my next work was inhabiting the identity of an expert. I had to ooze expert energy and actually own the expertise in coaching that I had built and that I had honed, right? I went to the life coach school, and before the life coach school, I'd gone through this other program. It's like everybody considers to be like the Yale of coaching schools, right? And it was very intense, and those experiences have made me a massively impactful coach. And so for me, the work was letting go of that thought and actually building the thought, I have expertise in the modality of coaching. And my self-concept was so outdated that was holding me back in terms of up-leveling and getting to my next level in my coaching business. So I had to let go of the thoughts that helped me sign my first clients and create entirely new thoughts and new self-concepts in order to up-level and create my next clients. So today, who I'm speaking to in this podcast is the coaches who are no longer finding it useful to say, oh, my brain's just an asshole, every time they have a mean or harsh or doubtful thought about themselves or their program or their success. And here's why I feel like this shift is so important for coaches who are beyond the first steps in their business. Is because if your thought is my brain is an asshole, right? If we put that on the T line, the thought line, what do you think the result is going to be? Right? Either you're going to experience your brain as an asshole, or you're going to treat your brain the way that an asshole would treat someone. So on a subconscious level, what happens is you're creating a relationship. When you say, my brain's an asshole, you're creating a relationship with your most valuable asset, your brain, that's abusive. And I want you to imagine what it's working like when you think your star employee is an asshole. What's your relationship with your business partner like when you spend all your time talking about what an asshole he is? And for our clients, right, what kind of a self relationship are we modeling for our clients? Because if we were talking about any other part of our body in such an abusive way, we would immediately be stopped and be like, hey, let's do some body positivity, okay? Like, don't call your stomach vile or your legs atrocious. But for some reason, we get off the hook bad-mouthing the literal asset that we sell people access to, our minds, an asshole. So I just want to question that business strategy for a moment, because it might keep you in action in the beginning of your business. It might keep you in action, and it might keep you out of spinning and from really indulging in, you know, the negative thoughts that are coming up. But at a certain point, if that's the strategy you continue using, it's going to impact your self-concept as a coach and the energy that you bring to your coaching. So here's how I want to offer we can take this conversation even deeper past that first layer of coaching and get into the thoughts that you need to have to take your brain to the next level, right? Because let's say your brain is actually just saying some fucked up stuff to you. My question is, why does that have to be the end of the conversation? Why is the end of our curiosity, oh, my brain's just an asshole, right? If it was my business partner, I wouldn't end the conversation there, because that's not a productive way to handle what's happening in my business relationship. There's so much more to explore there that we miss out when our brain name calls us and then we resort to name calling our brain back, right? So what I see most coaches mean when they say your brain is an asshole is it's like a vague and catchy way of saying, don't believe everything your brain thinks. Not all your thoughts are true, right? The unkind thoughts that your brain produces, you don't have to engage deeply with them because it's just your brain kind of braining, right? But what I see is that from the place of, oh, my brain's just an asshole, I see coaches who develop that relationship with their brain and never actually get to healing the deeper self relationship that has their brain producing those thoughts in the first place. They never go deeper into their subconscious and actually change the settings in the thought factory, and they stay working in inoptimal conditions. And so here's why this is so important, is because wherever there's a fight, there's going to be resistance. So if you pick a fight with your brain, which is your most valuable asset, and you're constantly belittling it, and it's constantly belittling you, you're only going to create more resistance. Okay? I mentioned this earlier, but it's like, it's a little juvenile. Like, it's how children solve problems. It's like your brain name calls you and tells you nobody likes you, and then you name call your brain back, and you call it like a rancid asshole, and like, we're just never getting anywhere. So the deeper coaching, the deeper transformation that's available to us when we're having thoughts like these, is we have to look at our relationship to our brains, and we have to see our thoughts about our own brains. Because these thoughts, more than anything, are the thoughts that are going to shape our lives and our coaching journeys. When I shifted my belief about my brain and the expertise it holds, I began to sign clients left, right, and center to the tune of my first 100K launch. So this relationship is important because it directly affects the bottom line of your business. Now, when we're first learning coaching, painting the brain as a separate identity and learning how to disassociate from it is useful for ourselves and our clients. For newer coaches, and especially people who are new to coaching work, the process of looking at your own mind can trigger a lot of shame and defensiveness. So what I see people do brilliantly is position the mind as a third entity that they can look at neutrally. And I think this is really powerful. It's a solid technique to show someone with very little self-awareness their own thinking without them getting defensive. It's a technique to create that space, like we do in meditation, where we're the observer of the thoughts, not identified with the thoughts themselves. And in general, the coaching where, you know, we're saying, oh, your brain's just being an asshole, it's just coaching that's there to like kind of unlovingly remind you that mean or limiting thoughts that you have about yourself aren't true. They're not reality, they're thoughts. And that sometimes we don't need to investigate those thoughts ad infinitum, right? I call this playing with your own poop. And I say that like playing with your own poop doesn't actually clean anything up. It just makes you covered in your own poop. So I also agree with that we don't need to spend all of our time trying to sterilize our brain and get in perfect belief and have everything be perfect and only have a perfect inner dialogue, right? I think that's a waste of time. Because the more you argue, if your brain's offering you thoughts that you're worthless and nobody likes you, right? The more you argue with someone who you know is lying, the more credibility you give to the lie. So I also see how it's valuable to not engage and get stuck in a swirly of I'm worthless and trying to coach yourself on not being worthless for days on end. At a certain point, that only gives credence to the thought I'm worthless, right? And that's what I call thought work quicksand, is when you start trying to do thought work on this thought that's just a lie, it's just not true. And then you end up giving more attention and more focus to it. And the more you argue with it, the more credibility you give to the lie. So that's not what I'm suggesting that we do either. What I'm pointing at is this is where I see the technique begin to be ineffective, is when you call your brain an asshole and you are abdicating your responsibility for what your brain thinks to your brain. And in doing that, in doing that, you're doing it in such a way that you make yourself powerless. And often I think the reason that we end up feeling powerless is when we do that is because we're not investigating any deeper. So I'm interested, this is what I do, is I'm interested in the subconscious drive your brain has for generating those types of thoughts. Because like our thoughts don't come from nowhere. They don't like magically appear. They aren't random. Our minds are thought-producing machines that have been programmed to generate certain thoughts. And if you can get into the mainframe and understand why your brain is producing the thoughts that it is, that's where all your power is, right? It's like 10 years ago, or maybe 15 years ago, nobody was thinking, oh, my ass doesn't look like Kim Kardashian's, right? I'm worthless. No one's going to want to date me. It's because our minds and our subconscious have been programmed over time to think of that as the standard of lovability or beauty or desirability that we even have those thoughts. But our thoughts aren't random. Every thought we have is the result of a program that our subconscious is running. So when someone comes into my program, and instead of saying, my brain's just an asshole, I'm like, no. That thought that it produced is a breadcrumb. And if we follow it, we can follow it all the way back into the source of the programming, and we can recode what's going on in the brain so that we can actually shift the thoughts that are coming into your awareness, right? That's how we get into the really deep work. And I believe as coaches, right, one of the reasons why I'm so fanatical about the work I do is because as coaches, we ask a lot of our brains. And sometimes we give them very little in return. Like we have this relationship with our brain where we're constantly trying to game our brains to give us new results all the time. Like we're constantly trying to put it to work and create new neural grooves and do all these things and change and shift it to create a new result without actually cultivating a deeply honoring and reverent relationship to our brains, which is the most incredible creation on planet Earth. And so instead of creating this reciprocal relationship with our brain where there's so much gratitude and so much love and partnership, our brain, we generate a relationship with our brain where our brain's like this weird little slave that you're constantly trying to manipulate and perfect and control so that you can have what you want. And when it's not doing the thing that you want it to do, it's an asshole. And then you berate it and you get angry at it. So I just want you to consider that shift in relating to your brain can create a relationship, a self-relationship, even in your own self-coaching practice, that can generate so much more ease, so much more gratitude, and so much more reciprocity with your brain, where you're actually in a space to actually give it what it needs. If it needs rest, or if it's tired, right? If it's like real cranky and it's upset, or if it's burnt out, rather than just calling it an asshole, you're able to be an amazing CEO to this employee of yours and give it what it needs. Now, for me, calling my brain an asshole was never something really that resonated for me. It never worked for me because I always liked to own all of it, to see all of my own shit and to be like, yes, this is mine. I would much rather my coach point out like, hey, you're being arrogant, than them say, okay, so your brain is being really arrogant. And here's why. I think the biggest skill I've learned as a coach is to have a lot of understanding and compassion for myself and other people while simultaneously holding responsibility, right? Some people create compassion by letting themselves off the hook. That's not what I'm talking about. What I mean is I can be okay looking at my quote-unquote flaws, and I can own them, and I can own the results that they've created, without making any of it mean anything about me or my lovability or my worth. I can have the skill to hold it as neutral information. And most days I have the emotional capacity to just hold space and to be with myself in those moments without name calling. Now, part of what allows me to do this is that I believe in this concept called the holographic nature of reality. And the premise of that is like we all have every characteristic that any human can have. We all have every characteristic in some varying degree or another. So the idea is, like, there aren't kind people and cruel people. Everybody can be kind and everybody can be cruel. Everybody has moments of generosity and everyone has moments of selfishness. There is no quality you don't have in some degree or one way or another, both good and bad. And this goes for everyone in the world. So we all, like, right now, the big enemy that everybody's mad at is Putin. We all have those same qualities that Putin is demonstrating. We all have them within ourselves as well, just in different degrees. And the reason that I love the holographic nature of reality theory is because I don't need to run away from what I find within myself. There is a part of me that is selfish. And there's a part of you that's selfish. And there's a part of everybody that is selfish. So rather than trying to disassociate myself from that thing to the point where I can't be with that and I have so much judgment around it that it ends up becoming subconscious and repressed, and then it secretly starts running the show. When I accept that everybody has that and that that's okay, I learn to be with it and to love myself and others in that state, and then I have so much more power to look at myself objectively and make decisions from that place of being conscious, right? I never have to not love myself because of a quality that I and every other planet on the earth have. So Rumi has this quote that goes along with this, which says, "You are the ocean in a drop of dew," meaning we've got everything inside of us. It's all a fractal, this universe. And the fastest way to fucking step into your power and not give a fuck what anybody else thinks about you is to own your shit, that you have got all of it inside of you. Because if you own it and you accept it and you have thoughts about you being messy or excitable or impatient, then nobody else's models that are judgmental about those things will trigger you. You won't have to avoid other people's thoughts because you're not avoiding your own thoughts. You begin to see that people judge you for those things because that's the same judgment they hold for themselves. That's their standard of judgment, and it applies to them and everyone else. So I would rather live in a world where I'm not holding that standard of judgment on myself or other people and just accept all of us, right? Now, this doesn't mean that I don't set boundaries with people or are clear about what I do or don't want in my life, right? It just means that when we're free of having to judge people in order to do so, we get to lean into discernment. Right? You don't have to judge people in order to set boundaries. You can be discerning about what's best for you without having to be judgmental of another person or their worthiness of love. And the same thing goes for you with yourself. You can be discerning about what qualities are showing up in yourself without having to judge yourself or another person or your worthiness of love. And so that's the benefit I see of actually, when you get to a certain place in your coaching work, to stop disassociating certain qualities from yourself just because of the shame that you might have. It gives you an opportunity to heal that shame and work with that shame. And then you end up being so much more loving and accepting. Because what happens is, if we stay in that dissociative model for too long and we're judging those qualities about ourselves as bad or wrong or not lovable, it makes us want to disassociate from them. So that's literally what we're doing when we're saying, like, oh, my brain's just an asshole, right? We're disassociating. And disassociation ends up creating fragility and distraction in our psyches. So what happens when you disassociate from something because you can't be with it is you end up spending all of your time trying to overcompensate and prove to yourself that you are not that thing, that you are not a selfish person. And you end up in that overcompensation, you end up going beyond the place of usefulness. So in order to not be with and to help yourself disassociate from the piece of yourself that is selfish, you overcompensate by giving more than you want to, and you don't set boundaries that you need to set, and you let people walk all over you without saying anything, and you don't advocate for the support that you want, not because you genuinely find joy in any of those things, but because your psyche is terrified of being called selfish. And when you're put in a situation where you might be confronted with that piece of yourself that does put your needs in the forefront, or someone points that out, or there's a situation where your own selfishness is glaring in your face, you'll end up becoming very fragile if you've disassociated, right? And your anxiety will surge, and you'll either collapse in shame, or you'll get defensive and angry and lash out, or you'll go into a coping pattern that's like you'll go even deeper into the overcompensating. And so you just end up having very little room to actually consciously respond when you're disassociating. And this also means that you have very little capacity to genuinely hear feedback. And it means that you'll be very difficult to coach. And so doing this work of owning all of it and seeing the holographic nature of reality and accepting myself and others and using discernment but not judgment about what I want in my life, it's why I believe I'm like a super easy person to coach now, because I am truly in the space where any new awareness of myself is just another place to love the selfish places and the generous places. That awareness that I get breeds understanding, which breeds more space for me to have compassion for myself and others. And I want to add a footnote here. I think it's important to note that like I am not saying that I was always an easy person to coach. In fact, when I started coaching, I was known for like what a little shit I was to coach. I was a little monster. And I was like super critical of all my coaches and their coaching to their faces. I look back now and I'm like, wow, like God bless the people that had to coach me when I first joined coaching, because I would constantly argue with the coaching and I would constantly tell my coaches that I was a better coach than they were. And I mean, I would just say all kinds of out of pocket stuff. And like, I was just a really difficult client to work with. And I just want to like hold that as like people can transform. Okay. This is a testament of this work, but it didn't even matter the skill of the person who was coaching me, because I was just so arrogant about being coached and so defensive, partially because I hadn't learned that skill. I was so disassociated from so many pieces of myself that was my response. I became very uncoachable. Okay. And like my first coach, bless her soul, I was one of two clients that she had in the program that I went through, that Yale program I was telling you about, like the Yale of coaching. And she actually quit being a mentor in that program halfway through. And I am still, to this day, I'm convinced that I was a major factor. I think I might have caused emotional damage. So just know that you can change, y'all. And suffice to say that this is not a quality that you are born with. Your defensiveness in coaching goes down the more you're willing to own your shadow and feel peace and acceptance of it and be with it instead of judging it. And if you aren't working on accepting and being with it, then you're always going to be resistant to coaching on some level, and you're always going to be difficult to coach, and you're not going to get as much out of your coaching, and it's going to be a lot more painful and difficult, which brings me, it's actually a good segue, let me come back to the brain, right? Because if you're always having to disassociate from any negative quality and attribute to your brain, right? If you're always calling your brain an asshole, then I just want you to consider that the next phase of your work is that there's some shame healing that's available to you that will have you not need to push certain things away. And that when you do this work, you will become so unfuckwithable, because when you see your own shit and you own your own shit, and I'm not talking about blame, right? I'm talking about having an empowered relationship with your shadow. There's literally nothing anyone can hold on you. You lose so much fear of other people's thoughts because someone's like, hey, you're kind of selfish. You're like, yep, I am. Right? You regain so much of your power the more you just own all of yourself. And there's no shame around it. And shame and guilt are the two emotions that are most commonly used to control us, right? When we look at religious abuse or relationship abuse or any kind of mind control, it's often rooted in shame and guilt, in creating paradigms where we're not good enough or we're falling short or, you know, our inabilities or flaws are causing us to hurt other people or not be good enough or whatever it is, right? And so when you do this work of actually integrating and owning all of it, you release all that shame and all that guilt, which is one of the key drivers of all of the programs that we have been programmed through culture, media, religion, familial stuff that kind of keep us in line and keep us stuck where we are. And from that place of just releasing that guilt and that shame, you're so much more capable of actually working with whatever pattern's coming up, whether it's selfishness or arrogance or whatever it is. You're actually able to be with it and look at it so much more powerfully than if you're drowning in shame and wanting to hide or getting defensive and arguing with the person who might have pointed it out, right? So when you get to energetic neutrality around your shadow, we can just put that quality in the circumstance line and you get to choose whatever you want to think about that, which gives you all of the control over who you become and how that piece of yourself shows up in your life. This will have you grow so much faster in your coaching business, in your life, in your relationships, in the amount of money that you make in your business, instead of just disassociating and blaming it all on your brain. When you can bring it in, integrate it, love it, you're able to actually shift your relationship to it, which is often the thing that shifts your relationship to yourself. And the thing that I repeat often to my clients is that people buy coaching from the people, from the coaches who have the relationship with themselves that those clients want with themselves. So the people who use their brains to disassociate from themselves the most are the ones with the most shame. And this is why I believe we have to eventually transcend out of this paradigm, because it blocks the growth of our business to not actually find the new thought and create the deeper relationship. Because what we're modeling is a shame relationship that shows up in subtle subconscious ways everywhere we go. Right? So I want you to know that that thought, whatever it is that has you calling your brain the asshole, it's where you begin to pull the thread from the sweater. It's where the conversation begins, not ends. And if you have shame about the way that you are talking to yourself, you need to start doing the work there and bringing the love and acceptance first to the shame that you have around that pattern of speaking to yourself that way. And then once it's more neutral, your self-talk and the way that you're viewing your self-talk, you can begin to actually work with it and make a change. Like, if you keep telling yourself that you're worthless because you don't have the perfect body, rather than just saying, oh, my brain is being an asshole today, and leaving the relationship there, you can actually change the thought around your brain saying that to you. So an example of what this works like looks like when I'm doing this work is like, I hear myself critiquing my body. And of course I want to critique my body because I have been programmed to believe that my body determines my lovability. And I do deeply want myself to have love because I do love myself. So of course, based on this thought error in my programming, I'm going to try to motivate myself to do something by being critical of myself. But the only reason I'm doing that is because that's what was modeled for me. Of course, my brain is trying to give me the experience of being loved, even though it's so misguided and afraid right now. But I can see its good intentions underneath. That's just an example. And this actually calls us, when we do the work of going deeper, it calls us into intimacy and right relationship with the pattern, and to begin to see the programmings that are causing us to have those thoughts and to begin to heal them. When you're calling your brain an asshole, you're never taking time to deeply, truly understand it. And so, of course, you're just going to want to disassociate from it and not have a close, intimate relationship with it. But if the reason that it's offering you those thoughts is because it's afraid, then pushing it away and berating it is only going to make it more agitated, fearful, and on alert. Like, imagine if you stubbed your toe and you were like, ugh, my toe is such an asshole. And that toe is actually broken. And that toe needed some tender, loving care and to go in and to be realigned. But every time you stepped and you felt that pain, you were like, ugh, toe, you're such a fucking asshole. Right? That's so what so many of us are doing with our brains. And it's not wrong. It's just not working. It's not solving getting you to your next level. Being the adult in the relationship with your brain doesn't mean berating it and name-calling it every time it gets afraid and acts out. That's the opposite of being the adult in the relationship with your brain. It means being the compassionate witness who isn't in the thought, but can lead the small child through their fears with kindness and boundaries and compassion and truth. Right? A lot of the calling your brain an asshole is an attempt to not be in the drama of the thought. But the thought, my brain is an asshole, doesn't create neutrality or calm our nervous systems. Right? Because guess who goes around calling people assholes? An asshole. So when you practice thoughts of name calling, your brain is only learning how to name call. You'll name call your brain and your brain will name call you, and you'll go back and forth, making the neural groove deeper, and it's only going to worsen that problem. Being in a fight with yourself is only deepening the hatred between your brain and you. It's only creating more tension. And if we look at the majority of the time that your brain is being out of pocket, it's usually just scared. And so it's trying to help you in a weird, maladaptive, absurdly rude and urgent way. And your job as a coach getting to the next level in their business is to learn how to guide it, to be more adaptive, to be more kind, and to function at a higher level. Okay? So that's what I want to offer you today. That's the work. To love your brain, express gratitude for it, see it as a powerful and valuable and incredible part of you, and begin to build a genuine relationship with it, because it's a miracle, right? It's literally biological technology that can hold the consciousness of a soul and carry it on a journey. Like, what the fuck? Your brain is not an asshole. It's a miracle. It's like, sometimes I think my brain is the most complex supercomputer in the world. It can create emotions. Like, there's no other machine in the universe that can do that. It's incredible. What we all have between our ears is pure magic. And when we are noticing that magic, that miracle in our brains is naysaying and being negative, it's just an invitation into deeper intimacy with our brains, not to start a fight. Right? Okay. That's what I have for you today. Your brain is incredible. Be nice to it. Be well, everybody, and I will see you all on the next episode.